If you're ever stopped at a railway crossing and the signals are flashing and you don't see the train, or it looks like it's moving slow and you're thinking maybe you could get across the tracks before the train comes, think about this. In 2018 alone, 270 people were killed at railroad crossings. 270. So stop, because trains can't. What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Live Podcast. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant, alongside the Fantasy Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano, and Graham Barfield. And happy draft week, fellas.
Yeah, man. Got a little fun coming up the next few days.
It's kind of flown by. I feel like the last, 10 days have kind of flown by in anticipation for this.
The last 3 months have flown by.
Yeah, you know, this draft season has been faster, I think, than others. Maybe because I personally have had some other things going on that have kind of distracted my attention.
What have you had think? Going on?
Nothing at all. Nothing at all. But yeah, it has
brought a new human into it.
It has gone from the combine to the draft in feels like a record amount of time. So we will have on today Emory Hunt, who, if you don't know, you should find out. He is maybe the hardest working man on draft Twitter. You can read him at The Athletic. You can read him in any number of places. We'll get him on to talk about some of the prospects here, especially because Emory goes deep. He studied about 800 guys. He gets into the smaller school guys as well. So we'll sort of pick his brain as we lead up to the draft. Also, a chance to remind you, we will have a second podcast later on this week. We will do another one on Friday in which we will recap, obviously, night one. We will maybe dig into the other nights, but probably not so much. But we'll definitely go back and look at what happened that first night and kind of give you a recap on how we feel about what went down there. So that's that. But before we get too far into this, go behind the glass. Our normal producer, Eddie Murphy, is in Nashville getting ready for said draft. And so sitting in today, we are very glad to have Kent Brown back with us. Kent, how you doing, man?
Oh, I'm doing well. I'm excited for the draft as well. It's going to be a good week. And what's fun about it is we think we know a lot. We say we know a lot, and then two nights from now, we're going to be like, what, maybe we'll get 5 of the 32 picks, right? And the other 27 picks, we'll be like, okay, I could see why they would take that team, that player, but none of us really know what's going to happen.
Is there a website out there that actually documents, which of the big experts actually got the greatest percentage of first-round picks correct?
There probably is.
There's got to be, and it's got to be wicked low, too.
I would think
there's,
so.
There's some mock draft accuracy. Actually, I think a lot of it boils down to, do you just get the names in the first round right? Because it's so hard to pick the teams.
Right.
You can get the names in the first round right, you'll do pretty well.
Especially with, trades and stuff.
Yeah.
Just throws everything.
Yeah, if you can get, 8 of 32, even remotely accurate, that's a good mock.
Yeah, if you can get, But if you can get 25 of the 32 names,
that's really good. All right, so there you go. We got a full show. Of course, we will do a quick GOT recap because episode 2 just hit.
Trying to get over that.
All the feels, man, in episode 2, so we'll get to that and more. But first, let's do some news.
Let's do the news.
The Bills continue to confound with their running back room. They sign TJ Yeldon to a 2-year contract. So, Fabs, now they got LeSean McCoy.
Ugh.
They got Frank Gore.
Ugh.
They got TJ Yeldon.
Ugh.
I was going to ask how you feel about it, but I think you just told me how
do
you feel about
not
it.
Want.
And oh, by the way, they might draft a running back. I will be surprised if they don't draft a running back, actually.
Yeah, watch. They'll go and get Montgomery, which I think would be a tremendous fit long term. But, I mean, that's turning out to be a backfield to avoid, man, at all costs.
I just don't understand what's happening there. I don't.
They got two dudes who are combined, 67 years old. Then you bring in a pass-catching running back in TJ Yeldon. They signed a bunch of wide receivers. I don't know. That offense is going to be potentially very fantasy unfriendly.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what it is? It's, this offense so far, it's sort of like... It's like a college meal, right? When you're you don't have any money, your work study check hasn't come in yet, and so you're just pulling whatever you can find in the fridge together, and you're like, whatever, man, this is going to do it.
It's like buttered noodles, when you're in college.
You guys remember that time the Bills traded for Antonio Brown?
For an hour?
Yeah.
And then he said, nope.
TJ Yeldon, that's... whatever. Maybe not. Maybe.
It's football.
Yeah. The Texans, their wide receiver, Will Fuller, says he should be ready for week 1, coming off an ACL tear. It's great news, Graham. I mean, I guess the thing with Will Fuller is he just has to stay on the field. When he's on the field, everything's great. He just has struggled to stay healthy so far.
Yeah, we've seen Deshaun Watson have like pretty enormous splits. Like Will Fuller being a lid lifter really does help the rest of this offense. It helps DeAndre Hopkins see a little bit less pressure in terms of his coverage. Obviously helps Deshaun Watson. We just have to hope and pray he stays healthy because he's dealt with so many nicks and bruises and now is a speed guy coming off an ACL tear. I don't know. I hope he's healthy because he's been a legitimate difference maker when he's on the field, but he just hasn't been on the field enough.
I mean, I think having a healthy Will Fuller is good news for Kiki QT as well. I mean, he had a couple of really big games, but I feel like after a few weeks, folks sort of caught on a little bit.
Yeah.
And we didn't hear much from him, but I think having Will Fuller there, again, you mentioned him being a lid lifter. That opens things. I mean, we know Nuke, he's going to be Nuke. He's going to be fine. But having Will Fuller there and healthy is a big deal, I think, for Kiki QT. Duke Johnson says he wants to be traded. He wants out of Cleveland. Understandably, it's hard for him to kind of find any traction there. They've got a great running back in Nick Chubb. And now they have Kareem Hunt. They got Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham at wide receiver. So understandably, Duke Johnson's feeling sort of left out. But it doesn't sound like the Browns have any plans to trade him. Fabs, I'm thinking about going on Twitter and starting a hashtag like free Duke Johnson because he's sort of wasting away in Cleveland.
I'm telling you, this is all just he's going to get traded. He's going to get traded. Okay. That I don't know that the relationship between Freddie Kitchens and Duke Johnson is all that healthy, and it's not going to get better, especially after they added Kareem Hunt. So I would still be surprised, even though you're hearing this stuff about how the Browns aren't giving him away.
Yeah.
He's a valuable asset,
right?
Pass catching running back, and a lot of teams could use him. They're not going to give him away, but I'd really be surprised if he's still with the Browns heading into 2019. It could happen because you have to wait 9-10 games until you're going to get Kareem Hunt back, but it's still a situation where I'd be surprised if he's not dealt.
I'm with you, Fabs. There's just been too much smoke about Duke Johnson getting traded, mm-hmm. and this is a very weak running back class, to say the least, and I would not be surprised if a team felt the need to flip the Browns like a fifth or sixth round pick for Duke, for Dookie.
Anywhere you guys can think of off the top of your head that would be a good landing spot.
Philly. Philly.
Yeah.
I mean, Philly's been... I think
they've been linked to so many running backs.
They've been linked
so far.
Literally all of them.
Basically, you'd have like a, Joho, Duke Johnson, and then everybody else basically fades back into the depth chart.
I doubt Roseman trades another pick for a running back, though.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That doesn't seem quite right. But, yeah, we'll see if Duke Johnson stays in Cleveland. Doesn't seem that way, and hopefully not. It's a guy that I loved coming out of the U. He just never ended up in a situation that was completely favorable.
I was thinking Raiders too, but now they re-signed Jalen Richard, who was restricted. So who knows? But I would be surprised if Duke is... what about Miami? Going back to...
Go back to Miami? Go back to South Florida?
Going back to the home.
I mean, he'll get plenty of opportunity.
That's the last thing the Dolphins need for fantasy. It just confuses us even more.
No, not a good fantasy fit.
All right, so we've talked plenty about the tight end position this year. Hopefully what is going to be a deeper position this year. Austin Hooper says he plans extra work with Matt Ryan after OTAs. They're sort of breaking in a new offense. The Falcons have sort of been on the hunt for a quality tight end ever since Tony Gonzalez left. I don't know if this gets either of you guys really excited about Austin Hooper, but he's going to have the opportunity to maybe make some plays if things work out.
Well, he was the top 10 tight end.
Yeah, I mean, I know that.
I know, yeah. I get it because it was such a bad season. I don't know. I think Hooper is what he is. Like, he's not a guy that I'm going to get super excited about. There's so many good young tight ends. You've got three or four coming out in the draft as well. Like, I'm way more excited about Hunter Henry, and I'm excited about O.J. Howard. But if Hooper is my tight end one when I come out of my drafts, I'm not going to be feeling that great about it.
He's just so low upside because his average depth of
and
target
no
is
no reliability
yards.
At
it's
all.
It's like 3 yards downfield. There's just no vertical element to his game. So.
Right. One other last piece of news. This just popped up on my Twitter timeline as we were sitting here talking. Jonathan Stewart signs a one-day contract to retire as a Carolina Panther. So
good for him.
We won't have Jonathan Stewart to kind of kick around anymore. But this is a guy who, at his best, was not a bad fantasy running back. I know he had injury issues, but he was a quality running back.
When he came out of college, a lot of fantasy folks, including myself, were high on him. I thought he was going to be a pretty darn good RB2 type.
Yeah. He spent a lot of time kind of platooning in the backfield with D'Angelo Williams there in Carolina.
That was like the big headache.
That was the big headache for a lot.
It's like, oh, it's Stewart, it's D. I mean, who's going to get the football?
Yeah, Marty Herney drafting two running backs there and then giving them both like equal opportunities. That was not fun. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Stewart had a great career, though. If you play 11 years in the NFL at running back, that's a fantastic career.
That's a pretty good career. So congratulations to Jonathan Stewart on his career. Enjoy retirement. I will say that as fantasy folks, certainly enjoyed watching you play. And that is pretty much everything you need to know.
That was the news.
Well, we have spent plenty of time talking about the draft just between the three of us. And so with the draft coming up in a couple of days, I figured it'd be smart to get somebody else in to talk about it with us. So I went to my Twitter Rolodex and I found Emory Hunt, friend of the program, who we had over the summer before the season started. But he writes for The Athletic. He's in any number of places. You can find him on Twitter at FBallGamePlan, arguably the hardest working man on draft Twitter. Welcome back to the podcast, Emory. Appreciate you taking some time with us. How you doing, man?
I'm doing fine, man. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah. Well, I want to just get started with the quarterbacks because they seem to be at the top of every draft. And I know you are very high on Dwayne Haskins. You have sung his praises on Twitter quite a bit. I know the knock on him is that he is not a mobile guy. He's kind of a big statue in the pocket, which doesn't seem to be the way the NFL is going. Explain to me why you are so strong on Dwayne Haskins.
Well, I just find it funny, first of all, that last year he had a quarterback in Lamar Jackson that people said could stay in the pocket. Can he stay in the pocket? Can he make throws from the pocket? And this year it's Dwayne Haskins stays in the pocket too much. So I can't figure out what the people want to go with. But as far as Haskins is concerned, when you look at how decisive he is and how consistent he is from an accuracy and placement standpoint, to me it's just so impressive to watch. I remember watching him in passing back in September, and this was September 22nd. I remember it exactly because I was heading to a broadcast. Now, I'm watching Ohio State first half, and I'm like, wow, this is the best quarterback in the country, and I just left it at that. It was clear that he's doing things that looks like a pro veteran would do. And a lot of times when people make the comment about him being, just throwing dump balls or throwing crossing routes, but a lot of that comes from what he's seen pre-snap to make what he does post-snap look that much easier for everyone that's viewing. So I just think from a total quarterbacking standpoint, despite not having Kyler Murray's athleticism, he's definitely mobile enough in the pocket to make throws, and he's very accurate at all levels of the field.
Okay, so you got Kyler, you got Haskins, probably your top two in some order. Who is your number three quarterback? Because I feel like it gets muddled at that point.
I actually like Drew Lock, and one thing that I'm big on when I look at prospects, especially at the quarterback position, is situational football. How well do you play under pressure? How well do you manage the situation? And I thought last year Locke was terrible in that regard. This year was remarkably better as far as managing the situation. And that's why he had the success he had this year, just opposed to last year when he threw over 40 touchdowns. But this year he was much more efficient, made better decisions inside the red zone, and therefore Missouri had much more success. So I think he got better situationally, which is why his stock kind of rose in my eyes over this past season.
Hey, Emory, Michael Fabiano here. Good to meet you. Thanks for joining us on the show here. So sticking with the quarterback theme, there's been some rumbling going on about Daniel Jones and potentially Jones being the top quarterback on a certain team's board that might be in New York, the team that doesn't need a quarterback. What are your thoughts about Daniel Jones and his prospects for NFL success?
I put this out there a couple of days ago. When you talk about a prospect and the first couple of things you mention are, Cutcliffe, and Cutcliffe worked with Manning, and Daniel Jones knows Eli, and they also played at the passing camp. Before you even get to what he does as a football player, that's like a huge red flag, because if you're excited about a prospect, you're going to tell me everything that he does really well. And you don't get that until maybe 20 minutes into the conversation about Daniel Jones. And so when you talk about him, and I always use this litmus test as well, for guys that are playing at quote-unquote non-flashy programs or small schools, your team should be in contention whether or not you have the talent or not. We talk about Daniel Jones not having weapons and all of that, all of those things, but you had a team out in Boise, Idaho, consistently winning with teams, with prospects from, you know, all across the country, but going to Boise, Idaho, and they're beating Virginia Tech, they're beating all these big-name programs. That's what you expect to see from a Daniel Jones. That's how you want to see guys show up in situations that are not advantageous for you to make that jump to the NFL. We saw Carson Wentz have success in North Dakota State. We see all these other programs outside of Duke, which is a Power 5 program in the ACC, no less, not have success. And then when you look at his numbers, it's so pedestrian and average that I just wonder, you know, why is this happening for a guy like him? And it's hurting him in the long run because he's going to get overdrafted, which is great for his pockets, but it's going to be bad for his football legacy.
You know, we talked about the running backs, and generally people seem down on this running back class. But I know you've written quite a bit about some of these guys. You've been to a lot of the regional combines and the pro days and that sort of thing. And I read you wrote on Flow Football about, you know, three sleeper running backs, and one of them was Wesley Fields. And you sort of made the point Georgia Southern has kind of become a place to go to find some quality running backs. I know you and Matt Waldman were sort of on that same plane. Talk to me about Wesley Fields and why we maybe should pay attention to this guy.
First of all, it's just the breakaway threat coming from the position. I'm always going to be a big fan of guys that can hit the home run because that makes my job as a coach so much easier to be able to turn around and hand the ball to a Barry Sanders and just let him do his thing. I look like a great play caller. But when you look at Wesley Fields coming from Georgia Southern, that used to be the knock for a long time that option running backs really didn't have the vision or the natural running skills that you see guys coming from traditional offenses. But when you watch Fields run, you see he has all of those requisite nuances that you look for from a back, whether it's running inside, being able to see the backside defender and cut it back against the grain. And I think because of how he started his career, you know, with the bang, but he was also in that mix with Jerick McKinnon and all these other guys that have Matt Breida that have gone on to have success, that he kind of got lost in the shuffle. But that also is a testament to how well they are able to recruit, how well they're able to develop. And for him, he doesn't have the quote-unquote miles that people talk about, and he's trekking in the right direction. He had the injury and kind of lost some ground, but now he's back healthy, a guy that's being vastly underrated. And I think he's going to end up in the camp and be another one of these surprise players that not only makes the team but ends up making an impact.
Hey, Emery, I know I was reading one of your pieces on The Athletic a couple days ago, and it seemed like you're really high on Darrell Henderson. He's actually my number two running back in the class. I kind of wanted to get your just general thoughts on Henderson and why he, in your opinion, why you think he's so explosive and so ready for the NFL, and why you think he's such a great fit early on in his career.
One aspect about playing a position that a lot of people don't understand is, you know, when you're seeing things two and three frames ahead, you're able to run with confidence. That's the difference between Darrell Henderson and his backup in the same offense. Now, Henderson only had eight more carries than his backup, but averaged almost nine yards a carry, nearly 2,000 yards, and 22 rushing touchdowns. So if I'm able to see things prior to it happening, I'm able to anticipate, and I'm able to maintain my speed and play fast. So you're seeing him be able to see this in real time, and that's why it looks like this guy is running through gaping holes. Well, he's anticipating what the holes are. So as it's happening, he's hitting it at the right time. He's able to destroy angles because of his speed and explosiveness. And when you have a guy moving that fast, yeah, this is simple physics. You're going to be powerful. So I think he breaks a lot of arm tackles. He's also explosive. His pass catching is underrated because he wasn't asked to catch much, but he was able to catch a few passes to where you see, okay, he's comfortable catching a football. I think because of his home run element, that's what you want in the backfield, especially in today's game where you're not going to get the guys, you know, the football 25 to 30 times a game as far as carries are concerned. You have to be able to hit that home run with 10 to 15, and Henderson is that guy and has proven it over the last two seasons because last year he averaged nearly 9 yards a carry again. In an offense.
Talking to Emery Hunt, you can find him at The Athletic. You can find him at Flow Football. I was reading through your pro day kind of recaps or whatever, and the thing that jumped out to me Ryquell Armstead, a guy that I don't think a lot of people are talking about, but you kind of projected him as an RB1, RB2 kind of bell cow guy. How much have you seen? What do you like about him?
I've gone and scouted a couple of Temple games over the last 4 to 5 years, and this is back when Jahad Thomas was starting tailback, and I remember watching them try to close out a game, and they're in their four-minute offense with another one of my favorite prospects in P.J. Walker, who's QB3 right now for the Indianapolis Colts, holding out there strong. But they went to this young guy in Ryquell Armstead to close off the game. He ended up ripping off like a 76-yard touchdown run. Like, man, this guy is going to be okay when Jahad Thomas goes on to the NFL. And Armstead just, he fits the mold of the physical runner, explosive, runs through contact, runs behind his pads, doesn't run high to where he's getting constantly knocked over or taking unnecessary shots. But he has a good natural feel for the position. And when you look at how Temple ran the football under Matt Rhule, it was perfect because it helped him, you know, develop his game, develop that vision and that nuance that you look for outside of them going to the spread offense now. So I thought he was tailor-made for the pro game, even as a freshman and sophomore. And he just has gotten significantly better each and every year to where now no one is really talking about him. I think what really has him underrated in his class is because he had some injury concerns throughout the course of his career, and that's why you kind of want to see him as an RB2 first to see if he can maintain his health, and then he can definitely be an RB1. I know a lot of teams, after his pro day, pulled him to the side right away to start interviewing him and setting up visits. Philadelphia Eagles, Chicago Bears. I know a lot of teams that are looking for that running back by committee type backfield are looking at Armstead as potentially their lead dog in what their running attack is going to be in 2019.
Emery, yeah, let's move on to the wide receiver position. And one of the guys that has really gained a lot of steam on fantasy Twitter and in the fantasy community is Hakeem Butler, big guy, had a lot of drops the last couple of years at Iowa State. Give me your thoughts on Hakeem Butler and whether or not this guy is going to live up to the hype.
Yeah, he kind of reminds me a lot of Dorial Green-Beckham. Because
see, that's not good if you're a fantasy owner. I don't want to hear about Dorial Green-Beckham.
Because here's the thing. If you're telling, just like we talked about Daniel Jones, and 20 minutes in, you finally get to some things he kind of do well, for you to talk about a receiver, and one of the things you mentioned was, did catch the ball well, I'm already out. I'm on the next play. I need you to catch the ball consistently. I don't care if you can get open, but you have to be able to catch the football. And that works. That's why I'm worried about Butler. There's, at times, he can catch the ball, which is great. Like, he can go up and high point it, play high post, all those cool things. But when you really need him the most to catch the routine things, he tends to drop those. It's almost like Martavis Bryant in that regard, how Bryant couldn't catch anything that was coming straight at him, but over his shoulder, he was able to catch those. So to me, with the drops from Butler, comes from him probably getting his hands up late, seeing the ball late, because you see him catch the middle to the back part of the football, which tells you he's seeing it late, which leads to drops, because a lot of times if you're seeing it late and your hands up slow and you get hit at the same time, you're going to drop the football. And so I see that a lot with Butler. And here's the other part, too. We used to have this discussion about guys like T.J. Duckett, Ron Dane, and guys like that. When you are in college and you're bigger than everybody and you go to the NFL, you have to understand there's no 18-year-old cornerbacks. There's no 18-year-old linebackers that's afraid of you. These guys are grown men. They're going to try to manhandle you at the line of scrimmage. So he has to, one, get better at the line of scrimmage, getting off bump press, and has to be more consistent in catching the football. I wouldn't take him high as people are talking about. He's probably a mid-round value to me because he really has to clean up those things if he wants to be a consistent threat out there on Sundays.
Emery, it sounds like obviously you're a little bit lower in Hakeem Butler. This is obviously a, just in my opinion, loaded receiver class. If you could give just like dynasty fantasy football players your top two or three assets that are on top of your board and maybe targeting in some of your own leagues, who would they be and why?
Anthony Ratliff Williams out of North Carolina. I just love the way he plays the game. Reminds me a lot of Roddy White. I'm surprised he's not getting as much pub as he should get because of how dynamic he is with the football and he has upside. Former high school quarterback and all-star quarterback, honestly, made the move to receiver at UNC and has gotten better every year. So he still has upside to grow in that position. I would also look at a big-time receiver that no one's speaking of in Keelan Dawes out of UC Davis. He's versatile enough to play all three receiver spots. I was consistently getting open at the Senior Bowl and throughout the course of his career at UC Davis, stepped up in the big games like against Oregon and the FBS teams that they played. And I also think when you look at these smaller slot guys like Terry Godwin out of Georgia, who plays fast in all directions. I'm a big fan of a small school prospect in Nahari Crawford out of Duquesne, tough guy that kind of has that Antonio Brown type mentality where it's his ball or no one's going to get it at all. So I think those type of guys are some of the guys I'm taking later on in the draft if I'm drafted for fantasy because of what they can do after the catch. Another guy to keep an eye on is probably Davion Davis out of Sam Houston State. They're like the Oklahoma Sooners of the FCS. They're going to get a lot of experience in running routes. Guys are going to consistently find themselves open. And this is another one of these Taylor Gabriel types that are going to be around later in the draft or undrafted that's going to have an impact on the team. So guys that can do more than one thing, guys that can put the ball in the end zone, are guys that I want on my football team. And this is a really good receiver class, like you guys talked about, very deep from the X position to the flankers to the slots to the big inside guys like Reggie White Jr., of Mammoth, who's another one that you definitely should keep an eye on.
Emory, let folks know what you will be doing during the draft. Where will you be? Where can they find you for all your great information?
They can follow me on Twitter at FBallGamePlan. And Thursday night for the first round, I'll be at Fantasy Sports Network, which is in Manhattan at 35th and 7th in Rock and Rallies. We'll be doing pick-by-pick analysis there for the first round. And Friday and Saturday, I'll be at the Giants facility covering, you know, the draft and also interviewing Giants picks and players and getting the feedback from coaches and also from Dave Gettleman himself.
All right. Hey, fantastic. Look, if you are a fan of the draft, if you are a fan of draft Twitter and you are not following Emory Hunt on Twitter, fix that. Emory, appreciate the time, man. Always enjoy talking to you. Enjoy the draft, man.
Great stuff. Thank you.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you for having me on.
All right. Emory Hunt. Again, you can find him at The Athletic. You can find him at Flow Football. Big on Twitter as well. Definitely a guy I wanted to talk to before we did the draft. He studied over 800 prospects.
It's funny because, like, there's, like, that's why I wanted to ask him about Hakeem Butler because, you know, I know you love him, and I know there's a lot of guys out there on fantasy Twitter that love him. But then I talked to some of the guys who actually are scouting these, like Lance Zierlein. I talked to him and you know, Emory, and it was kind of the same thing.
I think the thing with Butler this year is just a wide range of opinions. There's just, I mean, it kind of just depends on who you talk to. Mm-hmm. This class is a lot of fun. I can't wait to see where these guys go in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
you've got
I mean, the wide receiver and running back position, they're going to be, I think the second to fourth rounds is where we're going to see a lot of movement there at those two positions. And it's going to be a lot of fun from a fantasy standpoint. The one thing is that there aren't a lot of, like, featured jobs available in the league at this point because we've talked about it ad nauseum. Just we've had such an incredibly massive influx of really good, young, talented running backs come into the league over the last five seasons or so. But it is going to be interesting to see where some of these young guys go. I mean, I was downstairs talking to Rhett Lewis, and you're looking at Jacobs, who's
Josh Jacobs. Yeah.
He's the number one running back in this class, and people can't find a fit for him. You can't find, I mean, like Tampa, it would maybe be a fit, but they're not going to take him in the first round. Oakland could be a fit. Would they take him in the first round? Mm-hmm. You don't know. Philadelphia traded for Jordan Howard. So I think in the second, third, and fourth round, you're going to see a lot of good running backs and a lot of talented wide receivers come off the board. That's where fantasy owners really need to pay a lot of attention to this draft.
That's going to be the amazing range, I think, is that like second to fourth round for the receivers, because we'll see. So, I mean, there should be at least, I think, 15 to 18, I think, go in that range. They're all going to fly.
And legitimately, how many fantasy impact makers are going to be drafted in the first round, especially just immediate gratification 2019 impact makers?
Maybe two or three.
Maybe a couple. Not many.
Two or three, I think.
It won't be
right?
Many. Right.
So
obviously, we'll see Hockenson and Fant go in the first round for tight ends.
Right. Yes.
I would be shocked if either of them fall to the second round. But then for receivers.
Metcalf.
For receivers, Metcalf, I think Marquise Brown. Hakeem Butler, I've seen some sharper people mock him into the first round, but also I've seen, like, you know, Daniel Jeremiah has had him outside of his top 50 for quite some time. I mean, there's some plugged in people that have definitely been lower on Butler than I think kind of the hype has crept up. AJ Brown is, I think,
kind of a wild card right now.
AJ Brown's the number one receiver, I think, right now that everyone has just kind of forgotten about through this process, and he's
N'Keal Harry's out there too. Yeah. Maybe a late first, second round pick.
I think Friday is going to have a lot more fantasy impact than
no
Thursday
doubt.
Will.
Okay. No doubt.
Thursday will. So, again, thanks to Emory Hunt for stopping by. We look forward to getting this going, man. Just a couple days away from the draft. And, again, we will be back on Friday with another pod to just kind of recap what happened on Thursday And, you know, I don't know, get you ready maybe for the rest of the weekend. All right. Now the important stuff. A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. I should guess, this is the spoiler alert in case you somehow didn't watch Game of Thrones on Sunday. If you haven't watched it yet.
I don't get it.
Look, after this, we got 4 episodes left. That's it. So A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, right? Basically, everybody has gathered at Winterfell, and they're just running out the clock because the Army of the Dead is on its way. So it was sort of one last night with everybody together, because after episode 3, we're going to lose a lot of these characters, folks. A lot of these folks are not coming back. So it was a chance to kind of see them together. Big news, Arya is a woman now.
So, you know what? There was a second there, guys, where I thought they were going to go full frontal and I was going to close my eyes. Like, because she's like our little sister.
Right.
I didn't want to see that.
Never.
I just didn't want to see it.
Never, ever, ever do that. I thought it was a fantastic episode.
Oh, yeah. I loved it.
I know.
A lot of people didn't dig it, but yep. I think what you're going to look back at it and think... Yeah. Because in the next episode or two, some of the people, especially when they all got together and they were drinking, they're going to be dead. They're going to be dead.
Yeah, no, I think that's why we needed this one, right? Just one last moment. Because I think you start, it builds the tension for what's coming.
It was so good that, I mean, I thought the writers did such a fantastic job of overlaying, like, we know this ominous, huge war where half of you are going to die is coming up in the next episode. But, like, there were so many little moments that were so... happy, like Brienne gets knighted. Arya becomes a woman.
I got a little teary when Brienne got knighted. I'm not going to lie to you.
She's one of my favorite characters too. It was just an all around fantastic episode. Now we have next 4 going to be 80 plus minutes of just unbridled,
just brutal.
A couple of things that I thought that it well, Bran. You know, when he he made this statement. The things you do for the ones you love. You know, that kind of thing. I was like, oh man. I kind of felt bad for Jaime because like I get it like. He was a D back in the day. Now I think, you know, we talked about it last week where he's sort of, he's become a good man now.
Yeah.
And Brienne wouldn't have vouched for him.
Jaime's my favorite character on the show for what it's worth. I think he's had one of the best, if not the best story arcs on the show.
He's had a great character arc.
He's gone from completely hated by everyone to, I mean, he now is a man with, you know, with honor and who stands for somebody, stands for something and. I don't know. It's just it's been a great role reversal, but he's definitely going to have the anti-hero ending.
So to the two things that that I was thinking about too as this episode was going on was, first off, John wasn't in the episode a lot.
No,
he wasn't in the episode a lot. And then when they had decided as a group that they were going to allow Jaime to fight for the living, he walked right past Danny, didn't say anything, and I'm just thinking he's thinking. She's my aunt. And then at the end, it gets uncomfortable. And suddenly you're thinking, does Danny now think John's a threat? Because what has she been striving
for?
Her entire life is being the queen.
Yep.
Being the leader of the seven. Now, this dude who she's in love with, who happens to be her nephew, is the rightful heir. And then the other thing that I thought about was, where's the Night King? Is he on his way to King's Landing to turn all of those clowns into his army, and then they all go to Westeros?
I want to go back
to Winterfell
real quick to the Danny and John point. That was her immediate reaction. Was wait, you have
wait a minute? You have a claim to the throne.
Not that I love you.
No, you have a claim to
you
the throne.
You have a claim to the throne. That's the first thing that came out of her mouth.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, there. That is. I think Eddie nailed it last week. That's the true tension that's building.
Right.
Well, suddenly, you know, Danny went from being sort of welcome in Winterfell to feeling because not only is Jon a threat, but she had the stare down with Sansa, where it was, you know, okay, so you take over the throne. Mm-hmm. What happens to the North? And there was just this weird, awkward silence.
Are they going to hook Theon and Sansa up? I don't want that. I don't want...
No.
That's truly platonic.
I get it.
He's
like,
basically family for them.
Yeah. I get it. Like, I mean, you know, people want Sansa to find someone at the end of this whole thing. She's gone through hell with the men that have been in her life in that respect. But I'm thinking, okay, number one, Theon... Well, he's lacking the equipment. And two, like, I still would have a hard time forgiving him. Like, he did some dastardly things.
He did some bad things.
So, I mean, some really awful. Bad things. And I get it now. He's sort of, it's his redemption because It seemed like he helped save Sansa from Ramsay's Bolton. I don't know. I still don't trust Theon. Like, I don't think he's going to turn back and betray the Starks again. But I still don't trust him. And I don't like that whole, like, don't hook them up.
Not to mention that he killed John Wick's dog. So, I mean, he's just bad all the way around.
And then, speaking of animals, the ghost is back and they don't even, he's just in a scene.
That's true, huh? They didn't really acknowledge that.
They didn't acknowledge that he's back, did they? Right. No, not at all. So what's going to happen now? Now we're all expecting that this is going to be the big one. This is going to be maybe the first of several big ones, we hope, because there's only four left.
Brienne, sadly, is going to die.
Is that what you really?
Yes.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, her character arc is complete now. She's been knighted. Like, she's happy. You can't be happy. No one is allowed to be happy on Game of Thrones, and she is happy.
Does she die saving like Podrick, maybe?
She'll die. Possibly. She'll die a hero's death because she is a hero.
Right.
How many of the people in that room are going to die in the next episode? So you guys think that Brienne will be
Brienne,
one?
Brienne will die.
Okay.
I think Tormund.
I think Tormund survives.
I think he's kind of a sneaky bet to die. But
that will hurt.
That, yeah.
That's going to hurt. That's going to hurt.
The giant's milk.
That's going to hurt.
That was
man.
Hilarious. That's why I'm so strong.
Oh, boy.
Maybe undercover, I think we kind of all knew maybe Cersei was pregnant, but we did get confirmation that she actually is pregnant, and it's Jaime's.
It's Jaime's.
Right, yeah.
Which isn't surprising that it's Jaime's, obviously, but I mean, at least we do know, like, Cersei's not lying about that.
I think we lose the Hound.
Oh, for sure. The Hound's kind of been vindicated.
That was a great scene with Arya. Which sort of makes me sad because I wanted Clegane Bowl. I wanted the Hound v. the Mountain.
But you don't think that...
I want that to happen.
I feel like that they'd be doing the fans a disservice by not having that.
I know.
It's like when Hulk Hogan never fought Ric Flair at WrestleMania, and we all wanted it, and then it didn't happen.
I honestly hope the Game of Thrones writers didn't just give us what we wanted. Like, there's got to be some mayhem and some turn.
No. But I mean, so, like, that would be, that's like, yeah, no, I know. Oh, it would be so good.
Hound versus the Mountain.
It would be so good.
Yeah, it would be.
It's got to be.
Right?
Well, whatever the Mountain is now. I mean, what is he?
He's some sort of zombie monster.
Yeah,
thing.
Right. Exactly.
Who knows?
Exactly. And then you had the interaction with Sam and Jorah where he gave him
Heartsbane.
Yes, that was cool too. Yeah. So
I think Eddie predicted that, by the way.
Yes, he did. When that happened, I was like, "Oh, Eddie! Eddie!
Eddie knows his stuff.
That's good. No, Eddie's really good.
Yeah,
he's really good. So then Brianna's going to be dead. Maybe Jamie's going to be dead in the next episode.
Jorah is going to die.
Yeah.
He's going to die.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He's going to die. Sir Davos may also kick it.
I would agree.
He's kind of, I mean, like that guy. He's sort of like, you know, that old wide receiver that just like keeps playing and playing and playing and playing, and he should have been done maybe like 3-4 years ago, but somehow or another he just keeps, you know, he's like Irving Fryer towards like the end, you know, just keep playing and playing.
That's
and playing.
It's a name I haven't heard in a while.
played forever, maybe longer than he should have.
I think maybe the last thing we should discuss, and I mean, what the hell's gonna happen with Tyrion? I mean, he like low key has gotten a ton of things wrong in the last three seasons. I'm really interested to see where Tyrion's story arc ends.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be interesting, too. Because
he's one of the most loved characters on the show, and he's kind of had this, like, his character's kind of stalled here. Yeah. Whereas everybody else is going towards an obvious endpoint. Jon is going towards an obvious endpoint. Danny's going towards an obvious
endpoint. I said it last week. I'm just surprised that he was that stupid. With the Cersei.
I just think he was desperate. I really do just think he was desperate.
I think Tyrion was both desperate and he also still loves his family, clearly.
True. Very true.
In his own way. He still loved.
He does. He loves his family. Even though he knows what they are and who they are. I mean, it's hard.
He said it to Jaime. He's like, you knew exactly what Cersei.
You just loved her anyway.
And we saw that all it took to bring Tyrion and Cersei back together is a meeting with Elmo.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
No.
You haven't seen it? Go Google it. It's pretty funny.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
So, I mean, episode 3, the one that we've all been waiting for, is coming. It's, what, like 82 minutes long?
The next 4 are 80-plus minutes.
It is, I would imagine, most of the budget will probably be spent in this next episode.
And this is the infamous battle scene that all the actors said they hated doing.
It was just grueling that they never want to do this sort of thing again.
Yeah.
So when we come back to you next Wednesday after the draft,
We may end up doing like a 2-hour show because we've got to go through the draft. We've got to go through Game of Thrones and the heartbreak of the people that we lost, and then you've got Endgame.
Oh, true.
I mean, so like, dude. I mean, are you seeing Endgame this weekend?
Probably not.
I'm seeing it Sunday. I know you're going
to
go see.
Maybe.
No.
I'm gonna have to sneak out to a midnight showing.
Yeah. No. Well, if you guys don't see it, I'm not going to ruin it for you, obviously. But, like, we may have a really, really long show next week.
Yeah, no doubt. So, all right. That's it. We're done. We appreciate you listening, as always. Thanks again to Emery Hunt for stopping by the show. Tell two friends to tell two friends. Rate, review, and remember, the more you weigh, the harder you are to kidnap. So, eat more cake. We'll see you on Friday.